Welcome to the Unruly Podcast. My name is Kaylin Otto, and I'm your host. Together, we'll traverse all things travel.
But I always talk about travel magic, because that happens if you leave some space for it.
Activism.
So we can see that these ideas of oppressing animals develop very closely with our ideas of oppressing people and women.
Alternative living.
Who we are is nature. Who we are is creativity. Who we are is power.
And more.
The system hates a rebel. I just like to encourage everybody to keep being their beautiful, unique, individual selves.
All right, let's get unruly. Hello? I think that y'all are going to be able to hear the spring in my step, in my voice, because I think I am experiencing a glimmer right now. And if you don't know what that is, that's totally fine. We are going to talk about that in today's episode at the end. But I'm sitting outside in the forest, looking at a bright glowing full moon through the trees. And, you know, the sun has set, so there are these beautiful blues in the sky and on the mountains. And in the forest, because it's spring and everything's sort of rising back up, there's yellows and even purples, and it's just gorgeous. And I'm excited for you to hear today's episode as well. And I don't know about y'all lately, but when spring gets in the air, I feel like I'm going through all my papers, I'm going through old clothes, I'm resetting. And for me, I also did that digitally, and I looked at the Unruly Travel and Living email newsletter that goes out, and I completely redid it. I want it to feel almost like a glimmer when you open it. It has all these beautiful different earthy tones in it. It's very nature-inspired, and I want that when you open it, you feel grounded, and you feel like you learned something. And that you also want to close your laptop or your phone and go outside and sink your feet into the soil. So I need you to do two things before today's podcast episode. One, go to the link in the show notes where you can find the link to sign up for the email newsletter for free. And two, go check out the Patreon because we're moving and grooving. And for those who have joined me on Patreon, before a new podcast episode comes out, you get to know about the guest and the topic, and send me any questions that you have for that person or on that subject, and I'm going to make sure to ask them in the episode. All right, did you pause it yet? Waiting. Okay. So go do those two things, and let's dive right into today's episode.
Well, hello, Callie. Welcome to the Unruly Podcast. This is literally the perfect topic for the podcast. And I'm actually surprised that I haven't really jumped into it sooner with all the activism I talk about here and encouraging people to be menaces, because with that comes a lot of pushback. So this is going to be a good one. But can you just give us a little intro to you, tell us your pronouns and what you want us to know?
Yeah, so my name's Callie. I go by she, her pronouns. I'm a somatic practitioner, which means that I specialize in body-based healing. That means instead of, if you think of like traditional therapy, you kind of unravel the story of what happened to you, you talk it out. And with body-based therapies, you focus instead of the story, you focus on the sensations and how your body experienced this. And then how you can either move through stuck, unprocessed, you know, processes that help you move forward. And yeah, there's a lot under the umbrella of somatic therapies. And then beyond that, I specialize in helping people heal from people pleasing because I'm a recovering people pleaser. Takes one to know one. And so that's specifically the fawn response, which is one of the four trauma responses that encourages our body to engage even when we feel like we're under threat, and that leads to saying yes when we don't actually want to say yes, mm-hmm. or burning out at work, or having inauthentic relationships because you just are mirroring back what everyone is giving to you. You're like a little chameleon, like a mirror. You start to lose your personality, and then one day you kind of look around and you're like, oh my God, what life have I built for myself that, you know, and so I help people build their nervous system's capacity to like you said, experience that pushback mm-hmm. that happens when you start to discover your authentic self, start to kind of unmask and then move towards authenticity in a way that feels slow and supported and focused on nervous system support.
Which is huge because, I mean, this wasn't something that I was talking about until maybe a few years ago. And I think it's important for people at every stage of life. And there's so much miseducation or just lacking education. So I'm excited to expose the audience to this idea. And before we get into it, I wanted to tell folks that I met you when I took your villains course that you are launching here again soon. And I highly, highly recommend it because for all the activism that I do and all the trouble I like to get into, I definitely do some of the people pleasing and I have such a hard time when someone's mad at me or like they didn't understand what I was trying to do or say. And now they're upset with me. And I think a lot of people will relate to that. So we'll get into that. But I always have a surprise question. And today we're talking a lot about villains. But I want to know, as a kid, if you had a favorite movie. And if so, what you thought about the hero in that movie.
Okay. That's a good one. The first thing that comes to mind is like Peter Pan. I did not associate with villains. Like I had no positive association with villains growing up, but I loved Peter Pan and I loved the thought of being saved by some magical character that would save me and take me away to a magical land.
Yeah just pop into your window like Peter Pan did.
You don't have to ask, just pop right in, take me away. I love.
We'll have to come back to that and, like, at the end of this conversation, see how that's changed now that you've, you know, looked into villains and been more focusing on them, which is funny because I just watched two nights ago the movie Hook.
With Robin Williams.
Yeah, and that one was, that was really good, and I was totally thinking about the villains differently.
Did you have a favorite movie growing up, too, like a hero?
I really liked Ferngully a lot. The animated one?
What?
Ferngully?
Ferngully? I've never heard of that.
What? Okay, everyone listening, and Callie, this is your homework to watch Ferngully.
I'm literally going to look it up. Oh, I can already tell this is one of those really creepy 90s ones.
But it's so magical because it's about these fairies, forest people that are living in the rainforest. And they're friends with all these different species. And humans come.
Oh my god, that's so on brand. That's literally so on brand.
Oh, it's so good. Humans come and they're cutting down the forest. And the villain in this is not even a human, but it was the scariest villain to me.
Is it that?
Yes. It's the smoke from the machine. The gas or the oil and the smoke combines and forms the creepiest thing you've ever seen.
That's so creepy.
Yeah.
So you didn't identify with that?
No, because I was like, hell no, that is terrifying. And it was from this huge machine that was cutting down the forest. And I'm like, yeah, that's evil.
Yeah.
But it's a magical movie. And I don't know, it really calms my nervous system, actually, when you watch it, the colors and the landscapes in it. So that's everyone's homework.
I'll check it out.
I'll be interested to hear what you think about that villain.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if some of them are hard to relate to. Like, I'll try to like understand his backstory that I make up for him when I'm watching it.
That would be great. Okay, well, before we get into this conversation, can you define, because I had someone on Patreon and I told them that you're coming on. They were asking if somatic healing is different from yoga and meditation. And as I understand, it's part of the somatic healing, but can you break that down for people who haven't heard this term?
Yeah, that's a good question. So basically somatic, think of somatics as like an umbrella. So anything under the umbrella of somatics would be anything body-based. So there's, like I mentioned at the beginning, there's several different therapies that are more on the clinical side. Like they have Hakomi method, they have IFS, which is internal family systems, also known as parts work. That's used clinically with therapists. They have somatic experiencing. That's also a real certification with Peter Levine. And that's about following the felt sensation, tracking the sensation. And then also under the umbrella is yoga and meditation, because yoga and meditation connects you to your body, to the experience of being in your body, to your breath, to movement, to the sensations, like if you're in pigeon pose and the instructor's like, notice that sensation of stretch in your hip. You're doing a somatic awareness practice in that moment. So yeah, it's under the umbrella of somatics.
And why is it so important in the first place for us to be in our bodies? Because some people never even take a second to check in and be like, I'm connected to my breath. I'm connected to these sensations. Why does that matter?
So your body's always in the present moment. When we get in our head, we're usually like either some place that doesn't exist. Like I really like to go to people's funerals in my head. Like if my partner is late, I'm like, oh, he's dead. And yeah. I like go to his funeral in my head, which is not, I don't recommend that. But like kind of like we mentioned at the beginning, gluteal phase, I'm going to everyone's funerals. But your body is always in the present moment. And so if you're able to start to connect to your body, you're able to experience more of your life as it happens. And then also your body is constantly experiencing the world, perhaps differently than you are on like a cognitive level. So like an example of this is like, oh, I'm going to work. And I say to my, you know, my family, oh, I really like my work. It's really fulfilling and I love my coworkers. But as I'm driving up to work every day, I start to feel nauseous. That was like a real life thing that happened to me. I would be turning in and be like, I kind of feel like I'm gonna throw up right now. So that's a sensation that you notice when you're aware and connected with your body. And it gives you information that maybe your body does not enjoy this, either the drive into work, or it doesn't enjoy work, or maybe there's someone there. And then from there, you get information that it's basically like they say the body is an expression of the unconscious mind. Mm-hmm. And so if you're able to connect to the sensations happening, you start to gather information about maybe this doesn't work for me, or maybe I really love this.
Right. It's tapping into a sort of intelligence that you already have. So when did you first get into somatic healing and work? And
so when I was in my last year of high school, I got really into yoga. Mm-hmm. And I really loved it. I never felt like, it was a really good yoga studio. The owners were amazing. And it was just felt so safe. And my body just was, I would like cry in every yoga class. And I never experienced that before. I think I was just so clenched growing up and in high school. I won friendliest in high school piece. So I know I was like putting in the work, fawning. Like I was like, clocking in, clocking out.
Yeah.
But I never clocked out. So I think in those yoga classes, I just felt safe enough to relax, mm-hmm. even a little. And I would just cry in every class. And then from there, I became certified as a yoga instructor. And then after that, I started learning like somatic psychology. I'm really drawn to science. Even on the yoga side, I was really drawn to like anatomy and biomechanics. And so when I learned there was an actual science of how your body processes trauma, I became really obsessed with that. And I just started getting certified in all these things and learning as much as I could. And I was like, oh, this is really efficient. I feel like sometimes we try to work against our body, especially in like red pill coaching. I grew up with a mom who's a health coach, and it's very like, oh, you feel sad? Well, be happy. It's like, okay, thank you for that.
Thanks for the great advice.
Yeah, don't be sad. Be happy. Be grateful. And so when I started to learn, well, there's certain mechanisms that my body is naturally going to do. And that gave me the space to not have shame around those mechanisms, like being mad. Mm-hmm. That was something I always had so much shame around. But that's a natural mechanism from our mammalian nervous system. There's so many studies around how in nature rage response saves you, mm-hmm. you know, it's not culturally accepted and understandably in some contexts. But so I just thought, wow, this is really efficient. And it also feels very aligned with our natural biology, mm-hmm. because we're living in animal bodies. And I feel like working against it just makes it harder on yourself.
And how do you feel like we are taught to work against that, or we're taught to want to work against that as young people being taught to be people pleasers in middle school and high school and all of these places? Because I remember my senior year, I was just obsessed with getting the prom queen because I was like, that means everyone likes me. And then I did, and I had all these health issues that were going on because I was so anxious all the time. And part of that was because I wanted everyone to like me. And I was genuinely kind. And so I think, you know, that's part of it that plays into it. And I usually can see a lot of perspectives. But at the same time, I didn't even know why I wanted it. I couldn't tell you why. And then I got it and I was still sick.
At the actual prom, you were feeling sick?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, that sucks. Did you claim your crown though?
Yeah. There was a whole thing for it and it was fun. But I just remember having a stomach ache the whole time and just being like, why did I want this? I think someone told me I should want it.
It's kind of a slay that you got it though. Like, the stomach issues are so real with people pleasing because basically, you're just in a chronic stress state.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I started experiencing that in elementary school, you know, and it hasn't stopped. That's still for me like the number one thing. And after I took your class, I was looking back and being like, but everyone, especially as females, everyone encourages you to be a people pleaser from a young age. And I'm wondering if you've seen that in your own life or you've seen that happening to other kids, just in society in general.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like what I seem to be a really common pattern is that it starts with the parents or the caregivers when there's some kind of enmeshment. Mm-hmm. So that just means, and I see this a lot with moms specifically, because in the traditional nuclear family, I think things are kind of changing now, but you know, for our parents and their parents, the men would go to work and provide for the family, and then the mom would be home alone with the kids all day. And a lot of times the parents would triangulate with the kids. So that means instead of the primary bond of the mom being with the husband, another adult, it shifts to being the primary bond being with either one or both or with the children, which means that instead of the parent looking to themselves to meet their needs, like their emotional needs, they outsource their needs to a kid. And that's so much to carry for a kid. And that's how I think that's just from what I've seen over the years and what I've learned, that seems to be the core how people pleasers are born, because we learn really early on to reflect back what the parent wants to see to make them happy, or in some cases to avoid volatility or moods or silent treatment or punishment or whatever it is. And so then your nervous system, first of all, is like in a stress state.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, you start to associate that flavor of relationship as your standard relationship. And then it starts popping up. Like, I know adult people pleasers, and I know this for myself. I just made a video about this too, but your expectations of others are so high, because if I'm a people pleaser and I'm like, oh, I really want to be a good friend, being a good friend is important to me, I'm going to like, I'm so tired and I just came home from work and you're asking me to hang out. Like, I don't have it in me, but I'm just going to do it anyway. I'm breaking my own boundaries now to prioritize your needs, because I think it makes me a good person or makes me feel good, or I don't want you to be mad at me. And then I expect the same everyone else in my life.
Right.
I expect everyone else to break their own boundaries. And when they don't break their boundaries, I get passive aggressive because I don't have the skills to articulate clearly, because it probably wasn't in that parent-kid dynamic, to articulate clearly when something, you know, isn't working for me.
Right. Well, that's scary for people pleasers, because you're telling someone you're upset with them and they're not going to be happy with you.
Right.
So I feel it's like really it just plays right back into the cycle of that.
And that's where the passive aggressiveness comes from. I think that's really common in people pleasers because, yeah, you're so right. If I have an issue and I'm like, well, I don't want to have this conversation because this person's not going to like it. Like that's, and then what do I do? I'm just resentful and mad. I'm going to just be like passive aggressive. And then what I've noticed too, and they have a lot of studies about this with animals that have been in a chronic freeze state, is you snap the other direction. So you go from passive aggressive or fawning, and then people snap. And I've seen this in my personal life too, and I've experienced this myself, but they'll snap into a rage state. And that rage state's usually very dissociated and very not graceful.
Yeah. Yeah. Because people don't know how to be in that state, right?
Yeah, if you've spent your whole life being like if I'm like, no, Kaylin, it's fine, no, seriously, it's fine. Then when I actually am like, okay, I'm gonna talk to them about a problem, I don't know how to do it. I really, you've been doing this, and that's really not okay. And I'm probably come on really strong,
right?
And you'd probably be like, what the heck, girl? Like,
it'd be like, cause you don't. Also, I think that's the thing with people pleasing. You hold on to all this stuff, and someone could be asking you really clearly, really like in this healthy way, hey, does this bother you? You're like, no, no, no. And then all of a sudden you're like, this has all bothered me. And they're like, what the hell is this? I've been asking you the whole time.
I've been on both sides of that, where I've been the one who was like, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. And then I was like, it's not fine. And the person was like, whoa, okay, you could have said earlier. And then I've also been on the side of someone having their rage swing and me being like, oh my God, like, why didn't you say so? Like, why didn't you say?
It's hard to be human. And it's hard when you've done this since such a young age, when this is what you've learned, which is why I think it's so cool what you're doing and that people now can take a class about this. So I also wanted to ask you, when is the first time that you started thinking about villains in this new light? Because that's such a thing that we're just like, ew, villains, bad, bye. And you've kind of turned it around. And I, yeah, how? Why?
I think I started thinking about it when I had so many people. So, okay, some context is that I was this people pleaser. When I'm saying, you know, the profile of a people pleaser, I'm describing myself. So at one point was like, whoa, I don't know who I am because I've been people pleasing and I feel like my relationships, I don't know if I actually like my friend. I was so confused. And then I have a double punch of deaths in my family in a very short period of time. And one thing about grief is that it hurts like a mother, but it actually is really a gift for people pleasers because it's a gift and a curse because you don't actually have the energy to fawn anymore because fawning's really high energy. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know, we went over that in the course. It's so high energy to fawn. And when you're grieving, you just don't have that energy anymore. And so I very suddenly just stopped masking. And there's people in my life that were like, can I cuss on this?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
And they were like, who the fuck are you? Like, they didn't know. They didn't. I wasn't giving them what I used to. I wasn't bringing the same energy to the table or the same activity as before. I told you before we started, there's always something wrong with me. Where I always just be like, no, everything's good. Like, everything's so good. And that was so, I just couldn't do it anymore, you know?
Yeah.
And so, going back to answer your question, there was a time where all at once I had a lot of structures in my life fall, where there was people who, because I stopped masking, were calling me nasty things. And I was like, wow, I'm really the villain in their story. Like, straight up, they were making videos about me on their TikTok, like calling me nasty things. And I just thought it was interesting how our stories differed because in my story, I felt one way. And I was like, they have another view of it and they think I'm this terrible person. And for a while, I really resisted that. This was when I was doing coaching with Parv. And I was like, how did you survive this? I was like, tell me the secret.
For people who don't know, Parvati has been on the show Survivor. and took a verbal beating from people for not being liked.
Yeah, her final tribal was so brutal. Like, people were so mean to her.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's a legendary villain. So I was doing coaching with her, like, how do you, girl, I don't know, how do you do this? And she basically was like, you just get through it. Sorry to say, like, that you get through it. And you can like, how can you play with this? Was her challenge to me. It was like, okay, they hate you. They think you're a witch. How can you, like, play with that? And I was like, dress like a witch, pretend to be a witch, play it up. And I just started thinking, if they're going to think I'm a villain already, would that be so bad? I started asking myself, would that be so bad? If I'm a bad person, would that be so bad? Because I was like, oh, I'm a bad person. I have a Christian background. So I was like, I don't actually think I'm going to hell. But I was like, I don't deserve to have a good life. I deserve to just be miserable because these people don't like me and they're saying I'm a bad person. I was like, well, you know, there's plenty of bad people out there that I think are bad that have really amazing lives.
Right.
I'd be one of them.
Oh, wow. So then when did you put the two together? So manic healing plus villain. When did you see the benefits of fusing the two?
I got certified in women's embodiment and Tantra a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And Tantra has a lot. Tantra is like yoga of the lower chakras. So if you think of traditional yoga as like the upper chakras, it's like rising above, and then how can you rise above our anger? In Tantra, you're like, how can I embody it in the dance or scream it out? And it's more embodied practices. How can I come back to the connection to like what I am, or what I live in, which is a body, instead of dissociating from it like some traditional forms of yoga do. So a big part of Tantra is archetypal play. They have these like different archetypes, like the maiden and the sacred slut, and like these different archetypes, and you embody them. You practice embodying them in these practices, like in dances, or even just imagining what would it be like to embody this archetype. And I was like, well, what about the villain archetype? That one doesn't exist. And so I just made it up.
Yes.
That's when I came out with Venom, and I was like, well, I mean, I need this one so badly. So that's when I kind of started creating these somatic practices that blended Tantra, archetypal play, somatics, and then this idea of being the villain, this part of you that has capacity to be disliked, this part of you that is bad and proud of it, and that doesn't have shame.
Yeah, which is so... Yeah. Important, because I'm sure, to me now I'm like, yeah, but I'm sure other people, they first hear that and they're like, what, that sounds like bad, but it doesn't mean that you have to be a person who hurts other people all the time and doesn't care about anything or anyone. You can still care, you can still do activism, you can still do all of these things, and you can also prioritize yourself and have people not like you and be like, okay, that's all right.
Yeah. I think that now, where I am now, I feel like being the villain as like something that you have, not like you're constantly in that state, but it's like something that you're able to do and be disliked. It's like the kindest thing that you can do for yourself and also for the people in your life. Because what I realized was that before, I was like manipulating everyone, not maliciously, right? We were prom queen and friendly in high school. Like, obviously, we were doing good on some level.
Right.
But yeah, I feel like it's a really kind thing you can do, because what I realized with all these people in my life, some of them I didn't like. Some of them, they were friends with someone who wasn't like real. Like, this person I had made up to be like, this like friendly, positive person that never had anything wrong, she literally didn't exist. And so it felt like a form of trickery of like, at least now, maybe they don't like what they see now, but at least now they have an actual choice.
Right.
Like, choose of I want you in my life or not, right. You know?
I've noticed this with myself too, after I've been thinking about this more, is now you have a choice, because when you're being that people pleaser and you have that layer of like fake stuff going on, or you're trying to be positive and nice to everyone, it really doesn't feel like a choice to not be friends with people or not do something someone wants you to do. And now that it's a choice, I was just thinking about this today with some text messages that I got from someone. I was like, I haven't responded to them in 3 months. And the old me would have been like, oh my God. And now I'm like, well, that's just where we're at. And that's okay. Yeah. And that's better for me.
Yeah. And it's better for them too. If you're not, what are the options? You're not feeling it right now and you just accept that as the reality, or you force something to happen that doesn't feel authentic to you.
Right. And for me, it's huge that whoever I'm friends with feels like they have autonomy in our friendship, and that if it doesn't work for them, they can leave. And if I do something that they think is wrong, they can say it. And that's really important for me because I don't want to feel like someone's been lying to me just to make me happy for the past 3 years or whatever. So I know it's hard for people, but it takes more communication and it's hard, but I think overall it feels better in the end.
Yeah, it does. And like my circle's gotten really small since that whole thing. But I feel like everyone in my circle is like ride or die.
Right.
You know what I mean? Now they know me and they're choosing to be in relationship with the actual me and not the person like that I've been playing.
Yeah.
And that feels actually a lot more secure because I'm not like, oh, one day I wake up and I'm like tired or having a bad day, they're going to leave because I can't compliment them enough.
Right.
You know?
Right. Which, you know, I've thought about this lately too, because before I ever found you online or even knew who you were, I went through this really bad thing that lasted for a while where a woman was being really mean to me, calling me a slut and a witch and all these things. And, you know, I remember that period, I was crying. I was like, everyone hates me because my friends were turning on me. And I told Rivers, and she's like, so you are a witch. Why are you crying about this? Like, so do you think this stuff is bad? That's not bad. That's a compliment. Like, embrace it. And I feel like too, when you have friends like that, it makes it a little bit easier because they're not pretending and you're not pretending. And it gives you that permission to be like, oh, you're right. Everyone hates me, but you still like me. Okay. You see me and how can we move forward? Which I think starts to happen when you do this work that you're talking about. Like you're saying, your circle's so much smaller. You start to kind of weed out those people who think that these things are a bad thing.
Yeah. And that's a good point about Rivers being like, well, you are. I love that she said that. It's so true. You are a witch. I wish I was more witchy. I haven't been called a witch straight up, but maybe one day. But
yeah,
it's like, yeah, that's the whole thing. One of Parvati's big coaching things is how can you lean into it instead of pulling back from it? So it's like, I really relate to your situation. I remember you told me that when we met. And I was like, well, that's so similar to my thing, too, where it's people are campaigning against you. It's not just like, oh, this person doesn't like me. There's literally someone going around being like, this person is terrible. Don't associate with her.
Right.
I was like, okay, well, if that's how you feel, I'm going to buy this, like, you know, I had this leopard print coat and I just like fully went full villain. For me, it felt really good actually to lean into it because I was like, oh, I'm not, kind of like you said, like, oh, I'm not a bad person. I don't want to have this view of myself or this people to think that I'm bad. But then once I was like, well, it's kind of fun to be bad though. It like gives me permission to take up space and to be unapologetic and to unmask and to not always be cheery. And it feels really good.
So what practices do you do, which I know you like dive into in the course, but is there just one or two you can share with listeners that helps you stay authentic in that? Say you're in a situation, you're realizing someone doesn't like you, and that old version people pleaser is like, oh my God, I'm starting to freak out. And it makes me just want to fawn and it makes me want to compliment them. What do you do to be like, wait, stop, we don't do this anymore? Villain mode activated.
Yeah. In the moment, it's tough because you have to have that moment where you realize, oh, I'm wanting to fawn with this person. And maybe you don't even like the person too. That's what I realized.
That's the part that gets me. It's like, usually I don't even like them.
I don't like most people. I'm actually starting to realize, like, that kid in the bathroom. Never. No. But I think that's okay, because I'm like, okay, in travel times, you probably just needed to, like, get along with your tribe and not every single human on the planet.
Yeah.
But what was the question? The two practices.
Okay. Like one or two that people could do when they're starting to feel that and freak out.
So in the moment, I really like to put my hand on my chest and lean back, because part of people pleasing is, like I mentioned at the beginning, that enmeshment that happens where it's like the boundary between you and I just gets very blurred and I'm merging into you. There's usually, everyone experiences fawning differently somatically in their body. For me, it's leaning forward. There's a smile that comes up, like a laugh wanting to bubble up. And so if you're able to put your hand on your chest and lean yourself back, and you can do that in public pretty covertly, mm-hmm. you know, it's not like some like weird thing where you're doing like breath work in the middle of the grocery store.
Like,
you just put your hand on your chest and lean back. Yeah. Putting your hands forward. But yeah, that's a good one, because it connects you to the back line of your body, which is more like strong, and also focusing on your legs in the moment too, or the soles of your feet. Just a part of you that isn't, because normally when we're fawning, there's a lot of sensation happening in like our chest and our face, bringing us forward and engaging us with that person that we, you know, it's not authentic connection. And so you're able to either connect with another part of your body by noticing your feet or your legs, or just leaning back. That's helpful. Another one that I like for just building capacity and understanding what it feels like to not fawn, because if you fawned your whole life, you're like, what is not fawning? You might understand what not fawning feels like when you're burnt out the next day after a social interaction and you're home and you're like, oh my God, I'm so tired. But it's called the no fawn walk, and a somatic therapist called Abby Vernon created this one. And you walk through the grocery store. I think we did this in the course last year. Mm-hmm. And you walk through the grocery store, you walk through a park, and you just don't smile. And if people do the like white people smile, we're like, morning. You just don't do. You can say hi back, but you don't emote and go hi. And you just move through for a set amount of time, just without emoting. And then you start to realize like how often you fawn or like up your energy for some random fucking person you don't even know at the park who you'll never see again. And then you start to notice, oh, things that genuinely light me up. Like, I don't really like kids that much, but babies are so cute. Mm-hmm. I can't help but giggle at babies or dogs. And so it helps to connect you to your ability. And okay, how does not fawning feel in my body? And then also what genuinely lights me up? Because we lose that when we fawn.
Right. When you're saying, oh, everything's great, it's like you start to lose what actually feels great to you. And I remember after you taught this, I went to the park, and it always happens to me. It never fails. I'm at the park. I'm at the library. Some random guy wants to come up and tell me his whole life story for 2 hours if I would let them. And some guys start to do that, and usually I would lose half of my year to this.
Yeah.
And it was that day, and I was like, nope. And I just kept walking, and I was like, wow, that was so easy. I just saved literally 2 hours of my day and so much of my energy. So those practices are so transformational, even though it could just take a second, you know, the second of not smiling and not interacting. And you've saved so much energy.
I know, it's crazy. The amount, I have a friend that always says offer less.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that, because at the park too, I'm like, no, like, I can give you a full therapy session. Like, let's do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, offer less and then cut it back even more.
I like that idea, because I think that's hard for people pleasers and people who just want to give everything. I used to feel like, oh, I have so much energy. That's why I can just keep going and keep giving. But then I also experienced really severe depression where I was so burnt out. I did not care about literally anything. And I remember when it would happen, I was like, this feels so good. My body is doing this to me on purpose. And then when you realize the difference, and you do just give less, even though you may think you have the capacity,
I felt like I've evened out now. I don't have to go through this depression where I want to literally die. And it's just so I can recoup my energy. So I would even venture to say this is life-saving stuff too.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think so. There was a guy in the course last year who said that he like stopped drinking coffee in the evening or the afternoon. Because he said that he worked a service job and he would people please during the service job. And he said that after the course, he didn't people please as much. And so he had so much energy that he didn't need the afternoon coffee. So I think that shows just like how much energy we waste. And it's like, we're giving away our precious life energy to like randos at the park. Yeah. I would like trauma bond with my Uber drivers. Like, where are you from? Oh, wow. That sounds really interesting. Tell me about your story. And I'm like, what are you? I don't talk to Uber drivers anymore. Like, unless it's really natural. But
right.
I mean, you get so much time and energy back when you do this kind of work.
Right. And it's important also for travelers because, you know, when you're a traveler, you're in all these situations, whether someone's hosting you or you're waiting at the bus stop or you're on a ferry or whatever. This can happen so easily. And there have been these moments where I'm like, I'm so glad we just told each other our life stories and we've remained friends for years. But most of the time, I would say 9 times out of 10, it's like, oh, wow, that was exhausting.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point too with travelers. And I think you can still totally have those moments with people and they actually feel more precious because it's like more authentic, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's, yeah, I've never really thought about that related to traveling before, but I know there's people listening who travel often or want to travel more. And that's something good to be aware of before you get into that lifestyle. Cause you're going to be around people a lot.
That's so funny you mentioned that, actually, because I used to be a really big traveler, and I would love those stories of just, oh, I met this guy, and he brought us back to his house, and we ate the traditional food, and I was in the moment, it was really weird, but I just, like, would like the story, and that was, like, peak, like, people pleaser for me.
Right? Yeah. I've noticed myself in recent years being way more picky about who I stay with. And like before I would stay with anyone, I would just do anything. And now I'm picky and so guarded. And I'm like, am I just getting old? I think I'm just getting more aware and more protective of my own energy. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, switching to villains a little bit, is there any villain that already exists that you are like, yes, yes, yes. And I want to know if there's something like a specific movie scene with a villain that you love or a fashion statement that maybe a villain has or a quote they said or even a special power that they have where you're like, wow, I want that.
That's such a good question. Okay, for me, Cruella de Vil like changed my life in the new one with Emma Stone. Have you seen that one?
Yes. It's so good.
Oh my God. It's so, she killed that. I think the scene where she captures the mother, like the mom pushes her off a cliff and then she comes back as Cruella and then she's like, Estella's dead and they bury her. That is so epic because I literally felt like when I went through this whole thing where I was grieving, I literally felt like I was like, that people please herself died and I laid her to rest. And so that scene is so powerful.
Yeah, and when I watched that movie, I love that because that's actually a practice that you could do. Let that part of you die and try to let it go in some way. But I also love that, which I told you when I recorded this video for you, because it made me stop and think about the villain's story, which I would never think about. I'm just like, oh, I don't like this person because the creators of the movie didn't want me to like them. And in this one, it made you stop and think. And I, after I watched this, I thought about other villains. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish we got to know their stories. And I saw that even though like you as viewers understood the villain's story, there were people in that movie that never did. And like the villain just had to live with that and be okay with that. And I need practice in that. So I really liked that about Cruella too.
Yeah, I love that movie's amazing. I think it's good to have role models for villains. I think Parv was a huge role model for me as well for being a villain because people didn't like her. And I was like, wow, everyone really hates this girl. I didn't get it. But I think, you know, that quote of you either die a hero or live long enough to be a villain. I think that's true because humans are so complex and everyone wants to be a hero or a martyr or like, you know, somewhat like it, there's a sense of nobleness, I think, especially in America where our culture is so interwoven with religious roots. We want to be like Jesus. We want to die on the cross and we want to, you know, earn our place as someone where like, after we die, people are like, oh, he was such a great guy. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, we're humans and we're all complex and you can either, you have that side, you already do. It's like Star Wars, you know, Star Wars.
Yeah.
Okay. So you either integrate your dark side, like Luke Skywalker, you integrate it, you get the gifts from it, or you dissociate from it and it becomes your shadow side and it's still there and you're still going to act on it. You're just going to be dissociated from it probably when you're doing those, you know, those rage overswings or whatever it is. You're not going to be that present in it mentally. And then also you're going to be like, well, that's not me. Like if someone comes, that's why people with their parents, when they go to their parents as adults and say, hey, you hurt me or whatever, the parents are like, I didn't do that. It's because they were probably very dissociated from it in the moment. They might genuinely not remember because when you're mad, you have dissociation. Mm-hmm. And then also it doesn't fit the image they have of themselves.
Right.
So you have that side no matter what. You can either accept it or not, but it's there.
Right. And I would rather be aware of it and how it can serve me rather than how it can take over one day. Because I think that quote you said, I'd never heard that before. It will come back for you at some point, unless you die first. Like, it will come for you and it will either be really bad or you'll be ready and you'll be like, yeah, let's do this.
Right.
Which I, you know, because you brought up religion a couple times. I don't even know if it's asking you more than hear your thoughts on it, because there is this, especially in the US, this thing like, if I do bad things, then I'm a bad person. I'm seen as a bad person. And like the heavens or the universe will punish me and I will have a bad life, like you talked about earlier.
Yeah.
I don't know. Can you just talk about proof that that's not true? I guess where I see that not being true sometimes is like people who are actually murdering people, running companies where they make bombs and fund wars and stuff. And they have all these money, and I don't know if they're actually living good lives, but I'm sure they experience a lot of pleasure and a lot of wealth and a lot of abundance. And so I'm like, what? This doesn't line up with that, because these are people doing actually really bad things.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, how do you get over that thing where you're just like, oh, if I do something bad, I'm going to be punished by the universe?
Well, okay, I'm going to get political here just because, like, this is the only way I can answer
that.
Do
it.
Like, for me, I was, like, thinking when I was having that existential crisis of, like you said, people are saying I'm bad. Does that mean I'm a bad person? Does that mean I deserve a bad life? I was like, well, Donald Trump, it seems to be doing really well.
Right.
He's, like, going for president again. He has a hot wife. He's super rich. And then I was like, there's literally thousands of people that I would not consider good people by any stretch of the imagination or moral. And they're doing really, really, really well for themselves. So it just doesn't add up sometimes. I like to think that your karma is just being you. If you're a dick, you probably aren't super happy. So your karma is just being you. And so if that's how I view karma, I'm like, well, then how can I have the most sexy, pleasurable? I'm also motivated by revenge. Yeah. And my revenge is revenge living. Like, I'm not really one to be like, oh, I'm going to try to destroy this person, not hurt me. I'm like, how can I live the sexiest life possible so that when they're stalking me from their burner account on Instagram, yeah, I see you, that you're like, whoa, she's doing really good. That pisses me off. That's what I want.
Yeah, and you know, I've heard you say this, and I'm like, yeah, because I'm not one either who's like, I want to hurt this person. That's genuinely not in me most of the time.
Yeah, well, sometimes I do have fantasies.
Yeah, you have fantasies, but I don't think you're the type of person to make that burner account and be like, you slut, you're terrible, you're gonna burn in hell. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just, yeah, thank you for that example. I literally, when I do a small thing that I'm like, oh my God, this person's mad at me, I think of Donald Trump. I probably think about him once a week just because I'm like, oh my God, did I just mess up my karma?
Like, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, like, I'll be fine. This is nothing compared to all of that. So that was, that was a great example.
That was really comforting to me when I was at my lowest. I was like, well, if Donald Trump can fly, I'm sure I can live a happy life.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, thank you for all of this. And, you know, people can learn more if they take your course, which we will, of course, link in the show notes. Can you tell us what else people can expect from your villains course?
Yeah, the course is amazing. It's hosted by me and Parvati, who I've referenced several times. She was on Survivor, she was just on Traitors. And she's a professional villain, like a professional real-life Cruella de Vil.
She actually gets paid for it, basically, at this point.
Yeah, she literally gets paid to be a professional villain. And she's just amazing. And she has this coaching background that's really not traditional. Like I mentioned, it's very alternative. And it's very, it fits so well with this whole concept. And so I bring more of the somatic practices and things like that, and understanding of the nervous system's experience of people-pleasing, how to heal from people-pleasing, and then Parv brings her entire resume of life experience of getting hated on mass levels. Like, this was back when people wrote hate mail with their pen and paper. This, she's gone through it, mm-hmm. And like I said, her coaching is just so mind-blowing. You can expect it's 6 weeks, meeting weekly. And it's just a really great support group if you're interested in this stuff at all, especially if you're starting to make changes. I think that's like the best. If you're like starting to become aware, like, okay, I'm saying yes and I want to say no, I'm not very good setting boundaries, and you like want to get better and you want support to do it. Because it's one thing to have the practices, or I'm sorry, it's one thing to have the theory. Mm-hmm. Really, this stuff is so easy to understand, but the practice and facing the backlash and having that support for your nervous system when that happens, that's the hard part, and that's what you get in this group. Yeah, it's very non-traditional, and I think that's what we're doing is so special, because I don't see anyone else doing this.
No, literally.
So it's really particular, and I know afterwards, like, a lot of people said they got raises. Rivers said she got 2 raises and a promotion. And there's been other people that said they got multiple promotions after. And just because it equips you to be unapologetic. And when you're able to move through life without this like looming fear of being disliked, so much opens up to you. Mm-hmm. Like your entire world opens.
Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else that you want to share with listeners, and how can they connect with you further?
Well, I have a few retreats coming up that are going to be really fun. One of them is in June in Sequoias of California. We have 2 spots left for that one. That one's all about resourcing with pleasure. And so this whole idea of creating the capacity to be disliked, you need a certain amount of nervous system regulation for that. And the best way to get there is experiencing pleasure, whether it's eating delicious food or taking a warm bath. And so that retreat will be focused on that. And then I have one in September in Costa Rica that's about cultivating inner safety. Mm-hmm. And that's amazing too. So those 2 and then villains. And then my social media is Cali.somatics.
Okay. On everything, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So people can go find you, and they can watch. One of my favorite things to see of yours is like the little videos of glimmers that you'll post, which if people don't know are like little moments that, I don't know, I see them as little moments that are really special to you that feel really good to your brain and your nervous system. And it's inspired me to look for those more in my own life. And the small practice of doing that has really changed a lot for me. So I think if people follow you, even if they see something, they're like, oh, that just seems really small. Try it out, because it could be a huge shift for you.
Yeah, the glimmers are awesome.
Yeah. So can you tell us, before we leave, one glimmer that you've experienced today?
For me, it was the gym. There was no one in the gym just now. And I've been practicing stimming more with music, just further unmasking. So yeah. Stimming.
No, what is this?
It's neurodivergent when you have, there's a lot of bilateral, like people will like rock or like hum, or it's like normally like a self-soothing type of movement or sound. And I normally suppress those, but I've been practicing doing those more. So I was in the gym, there was no one there. I was listening to Unwritten by Natasha Bedingfield.
Oh, yes.
And I was like stimming, I was doing the notes in my hand, and the sun was coming in, and that was like a moment where that felt really good in my body. So
yes.
Yeah. What about you?
Oh, let me think. Today. So first my mind went to the other day, because I guess the moment was just so big. It's like taking over my thoughts, but I can finally use our outdoor shower again without it feeling like it's this huge, like I'm just standing in icy water forever. And it felt so good. So I took a cold shower, but the sun was out. So I sat in this chair behind my house naked, full sun just hitting me. With my eyes closed, I put this blanket and pillow as comfortable as I could. So I didn't have to support my body at all. I was just laying limp with like my legs open in the sun. And it felt so good. And I think I'm still riding off that glimmer, that memory in the
past.
That's
a glimmer.
Yeah. Oh, it felt so good.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I am so glad that you joined me for today's episode. If you want to learn more about the topic that we discussed today, head over to unrulytravel.com. If today's conversation made you laugh or cry or feel seen or inspired in any way, please take just 30 seconds to follow the show and rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts. Then share this episode with a friend. I'll see you next time. Stay unruly.